a star and a shining time. I'm gonna love you anyway. So I love you anyway. You can call me day. Yo, yo, yo. Nighttime. We're back. From
anywhere you are. Like and subscribe.
No matter how far. No matter. It feels so beautiful. Don't you agree?
Yo.
Kiwi, what's up, baby?
Yo. And you know what it's all about.
Already know it's me. And I ain't even in the game.
Welcome to the Grown Little Boy Show.
First one they blame is you your time, you a lame. Stop mentioning my name, my nigga.
You a, why you a, do your time, you a lame. Stop mentioning my name.
They took pick from us, now it's just looch peeing. I'm the one they call on. Gotta feed the family, if not, then it falls on. Who else? This is real talk, funeral arrangements. Whoever put their paws on.
Yo. We gonna get part 4 of the Bojean appeal. We're finishing up Geronda. We're going into Jane.
What they talking about?
Me.
Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk about is
me.
What they talking about?
Me.
Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk about is what they talking about?
Me.
Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk about is
it's all they talk about. It's all the fuck they talk about.
Me. Who they talking about? Me. All they talk about. Who can go the distance?
Who's underrated? Who's the most consistent?
Who get the real love?
Yeah.
Who the girls love?
Huh? Who the male love?
Jada.
Good nigga, good heart, lot of life I'm saved by.
Bad boy, rough ride, a lot of money was made by
me.
Real talk. Large bag from Steve Style, commercial with AI. Good looking. One of the last of the OGs
to stay fly.
Who else you know went at it with Beanie and 50 besides? Who? Even threatened to throw a refrigerator at Diddy, my guy.
What they talking about?
Me.
Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk about
is
what they talking about?
Me. Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk
That's
about
all they talking about.
What they talking about?
Me.
Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk about is what they talking about?
Me.
Who they talking about?
Me.
All they talk about. Who started off moving that work?
Put you in the black hearse. Never had a whack verse.
Now think, don't react first. Ain't a wild nigga, but it still
let my gap burst.
Never got his just due. Does everybody feel like that?
Or is it just due?
Huh? I don't know. Sometimes I look in the mirror and be like, I don't even trust you. Just me.
Ha ha. Ooh, classic Jada. Y'all know nothing about that. Y'all don't know shit about that. You don't know about no Jada. You don't know about no Jada Kiss. All right, we're going to get into this thing. The government. Man, hold on. Let me see what I'm doing here. Still getting new to this, guys. I'm still getting new to this. Okay. We're about to read Racketeering Act 7, Sexual Exploitation of a Child. Geronda. This is the last one before we get into Jane. Here we go. The government failed to prove Racketeering Act 7, that is, sexual exploitation of Geronda. According to Geronda, her 6-month sexual relation with the defendant, he recorded her with a Canon video camera and on an iPhone. The government produced no images or metadata corroborating this claim. Rather, the government contends that evidence that the defendant owned a Canon video camera and had iPhone that had the ability to video is sufficient evidence to establish the elements of this defense. The government failed to prove that the defendant used, employed, persuaded, induced, or enticed Geronda to take part sexually explicit conduct for the purposes of producing a visual depiction. To demonstrate that defendant committed sexual exploitation of a child pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 2251, it's not enough for Geronda to simply allege that defendant recorded sexually explicit conduct. Geronda's testimony was sufficient to prove that the defendant used persuaded, induced, enticed, or coerced her into sexual explicit conduct. According to Geronda, she had an ongoing sexual relationship with defendant before defendant allegedly video recorded her, recorded here. a relationship that the defendant would have no reason to believe that believe was prohibited since Geronda misrepresented her age. Although Geronda describes those sexual experiences in hindsight as humiliating, it does not follow that the defendant did anything to persuade, induce, entice, or coerce her into the sexual activity that was recorded. She was a minor. Didn't matter if he sexually induced or enticed or persuaded. She was a minor. She was never supposed to be there. The government must prove that the defendant did something more than just film the sexual explicit conduct. No, they don't. She was 16. He'd been through a federal trial before and paid multiple lawsuits before this. His job as a citizen was to make sure that she was of age. If the act of filming or recording was insufficient to sustain the charge, Congress would not have included a requirement that the defendant employ, persuade, induce, entice, or coerce. Furthermore, the government failed to prove that the defendant acted with a purpose of producing a visual depiction of that conduct. Although the jury was erroneously charged that government would sustain the charge by proving that the purpose was transmitting a visual depiction, the statute requires something different. Indeed, producing is defined by the statute as producing, directing, manufacturing, issuing, publishing, or advertising. USC 2256. While the statute prohibits the transmission of live visual depictions, defendant was not charged with transmitting the live visual depiction, and there's no evidence that he did. Lastly, the government's affecting interstate commerce efficient was insufficient where it could not establish what device, if any, was used to make these recordings. She has an argument. These motions are tough. These motions are tough. But they fall flat based upon his past. I don't know. The government failed to prove that defendant committed Mann Act violations in connection with his sexual activity with Jane on or about April 28, 2015 and May 1st, 2015 in the state of California. Jane was 17 years old in May 2015.
Hi, Bruce. I wanted you to give an update on
oh, man. The government failed to prove that defendant committed Mann Act violation in connection with sexual activity with Jane. We're getting into Jane now. So I'm going to read this real slow because a lot of people have been asking me to read it. And, you know, we're going to read it. We're going to chop it up. We're going to read it. Racketeering Act 8, Mann Act violations. For those of you who don't know what Mann Act violation is, it's traveling across state lines with a minor under the age of 18. The government failed to prove that defendant committed Mann Act violations in connection with his sexual activity with Jane on or about April 28th, 2015 and May 1st, 2015. Now let me stop right there. Remember I told you, the Funk Fest was on April 18th. Azriel went with R. Kelly on April 28th. So 10 days after she met him. She met him on that Saturday. On Monday, she was at the Tuesday, she was at the Dolphin Hotel with him. 7 days from that date, she was with R. Kelly in California. After the police was called, after what you've seen on Surviving R. Kelly, we're going to get into all of that. I'll read that again. The government failed to prove that defendant committed Mann Act violations in connection with his sexual activity with Jane on or about April 28, 2015 and May 1st, 2015. In the state of California, Jane was 17 years old. In May 2015, she concedes that she misrepresented it. Her age to the defendant when she met him and kept her true age a secret until fall of 2015. After meeting the defendant in Orlando, Florida in April 2015, Jane traveled to meet him at the end of April 2015. The government charged defendant with two Mann Act violations in connection with this trip, alleging that first that defendant violated 18 U.S.C. 2421. Racketeering transportation A. This is the first part of it. Preliminary to the government use of the Mann Act under the present set of facts is unprecedented and unjustified. 18 U.S.C. 2421 provides that whoever knowingly transports an individual in interstate commerce or foreign commerce on any territory or possession of the United States with intent that such individual engage in prostitution or any sexual activity for which any person can be charged with a criminal offense or attempts to do so shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. The government contended that the defendant arranged for Jane to travel to California with the intent of willfully exposing her to a contagious, infectious, and communicable disease in violation of California Health and Safety Code 120290. The government failed to prove Mann Act violation under 2421 where it offered insufficient evidence that the defendant transported James with the intent of exposing her to herpes and two, committed a violation of California Safety Health Code by proof beyond a reasonable doubt. What she's saying is that the government can't prove that when she went to California that that was the actual time that he gave her herpes. And the problem with this, the problem with that is that the lawyer can't prove that he didn't. But the jury decided that he did. The jury said that I believe that he gave her herpes on that trip. Okay. Intent. Because there is no link connecting defendant transportation of Jane with an intent to expose her to herpes, defendant cannot be guilty of a Mann Act violation. Let me read that again. Because there is no link connecting defendant's transportation of Jane with an intent to expose her to herpes, defendant cannot be guilty of a Mann Act violation. So she's saying that because the defendant didn't intend, like he didn't say, hey, come on this, and when she go on this trip, I'm going to give her herpes, that he cannot be guilty of a Mann Act violation. But if you go back up to when she read the actual, the Mann Act, you know, the government use of the Mann Act present set of fact is, you know what I mean? What present set of fact is, it doesn't say that. It say any sexual activity for which any person can be charged with a criminal offense. You see what I'm saying? It says nothing about he has to have intent to give her herpes. You know, I'm not understanding what this intent is. Okay. Because there's no link connecting defendant transportation of Jane with an intent to expose her to herpes, defendant cannot be guilty of a Mann Act violation. That's not true. The 9th and 10th Circuit Courts of Appeal have held to establish the intent requirement of the Mann Act violation. The government must prove that the illegal sexual activity is the dominant significant. It was. He was asking for her to come every time he met her, and he fucking, man. Or motivated purpose behind transportation, United States. And then she cited case law. Similarly, in United States versus Hayward, the 3rd Circuit approved the district court jury instruction that stated, is it not necessary for the government to prove that the illegal sexual activity was the sole purpose for the transportation? A person may have several different purposes or motives for such travel, and each may prompt in varying degrees the act of making the journey. The government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt, however, that a significant motivating purpose of the travel across state line, state or foreign border boundaries was to have the individual transported to engage in illegal sexual activity. In other words, the illegal sexual activity must have not been merely incident to the trip. The United States versus Campbell, the 5th Circuit analyzed the intent requirement of 18 U.S.C. 2421 and held that in determining whether a dominant purpose exists, we intend acts to illicit behavior is one of the efficient and compelling purposes of the travel. They cite case law. Interpreting the dominant purpose standard to merely significant or compelling or efficient. Then they cite case law holding that to prove the intent elements under 2423. The illicit behavior must be one of the purposes motivating the interstate transportation. The Second Circuit does not seem to have answered the intent question, but whether this court applies a true dominant purpose standard or merely a significant or motivating purpose standard, the result is the same. The defendant alleged violation of California health law prohibiting him from exposing a partner to herpes was incidental to the trip. There is no proof in this record that demonstrates the defendant's motivating purpose in transporting Jane to California was to expose her to herpes. In fact, the government can't even show that the motivating purpose of the trip had anything to do with Jane. I'm going to read that again. This is important. There is no proof in the record that demonstrates that defendant's motivating purpose in transporting Jane to California was exposing her to herpes. In fact, the government can't even show that the motivating purpose of the trip had anything to do with Jane, as Jane herself testified when asked. Question. And while you were 17, did you take additional trips to California with the defendant? She answered, yes, I did. And do you remember where you traveled to? I do not. Do you remember what the purpose of your travel was? He had shows. In short, no rational juror could find that the government provided that the defendant intent to transport Jane was to infect her with herpes. Violation of California Health and Safety Code 102-120-290. Secondly, the government did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that defendant committed a violation of California Health and Safety Code 120-290 because the government charged defendant with a repeal version of the statute no longer in effect, a version that reduced the government's burden of proof. Prior to the jury charge in this case, defendant notified the court that the jury instructions did not reflect the elements of the California Health and Safety Code 120-290. The government acknowledged as much but argued that it charged the defendant under the statute that was effective in 2015. The government had no authority to charge the defendant with a statute that was repealed or inoperative at the time of prosecution. They cite case law. In a case statute is repealed or rendered or inoperative, no further proceedings can be had to enforce it in pending prosecution unless the competent authority has kept the statute alive for that purpose. In 2015, 102-120-290 of the California Health and Safety Code provided, except in provided section of 120-291, in the case of the removal of an afflicted person in the manner of the least dangerous of the public health, any person afflicted with any contagious or infectious or communicable disease who willfully expose himself or herself to another person, and any persons who willfully expose another person afflicted with the disease to someone else, is guilty of a misdemeanor. The statute was overhauled entirely in 2018 after the California legislature determined that it was inadequate, having been passed during an era of discrimination toward those inflicted with HIV. The current statute bears little to no resemblance to the repealed 2015 version, least of all because it now requires a showing of specific intent to transmit the disease. Although repealed or inoperative, the government proposed a jury instruction that attempted to reflect the elements of the 2015 statute. Apparently recognizing that the 2015 statute was unconstitutionally vague in any event, the government stepped in the shoes of the legislature and rewrote the statute to save it from a constitutional challenge. Thus, the government not only charged the defendant with the repeal statute, but rewrote it in clear violation of various constitutional provisions, including the separation of power clause and principles of the commodity. Defendant's jury was instructed pursuant to a statute that never existed. A California court has no authority to rewrite a California statute, and neither does a direct court sitting in New York. Even if the government had the authority to charge defendant under 2015 version of 120-290 of the California Health and Safety Code, the statute does not pass constitutional muster. But obviously, the statute is void for vagueness both on its face and it is applied to the defendant. The doctrine of vagueness guards against arbitrary or discriminatory law enforcement by insisting that a statute provide standards to govern the actions of police officers, prosecutors, juries, and judges. They cite case law. As written, The 2015 law fails to provide adequate definitions that put individuals at any chronic or potentially contagious diseases on notice of what amounts to criminal conduct, including communicable diseases that are not sexually transmitted. By way of example, nearly 50% of the population has herpes simplex, a communicable disease. Under 2015 statute, anyone with herpes simplex 1, also known as cold sores, who kisses another person without disclosing they have herpes simplex 1, is guilty of a misdemeanor, even if the afflicted person have no active infection outbreak and does not pass the disease along to the recipient of the kiss. Under this statute, parents with herpes simplex 1, again 50% of the population, will be prohibited from kissing their own children. One cannot imagine how many arbitrary prosecutions can take place in this current era of a pandemic if this law was in effect today. Even if the elements of this statute were, as the government alleged, insufficient evidence existed to sustain a charge. The government did not prove that the defendant was contagious, infected, or had the capacity to transmit herpes during the sexual encounter he had with Jane in 2015. Additionally, the government cannot show the defendant acted willfully with knowledge of the consequences. Presumably, the government assumes that the consequences is transmitting the disease to the person exposed, but effective treatments exist for herpes that significantly reduce outbreaks and the likelihood of transmission if defendant was taking Valtrex in 2015. It cannot be said that he willfully exposed Jane with knowledge of the consequences, particularly since Jane was not infected with herpes in April 2015. That's a stretch. This racketeering act cannot be sustained where it was based on a repeal law, was rewritten, and was facially unconstitutional in any event. Now that falls flat. It is executed perfectly, but it falls flat. And the reason I'm going to say that it falls flat is because I don't know. It just falls flat. You know? And I think that challenging the laws, challenging the statutes is what she's supposed to do. I think that she's a great attorney. Sentencing in 3 days. I can feel it in the air. Let's go.
Something going on, I feel funny, can't tell me nothing different. My nose twitching, intuition setting in like Steve Vision. I still close my eyes, I still see vision. Still hear that voice in the back of my mind. So what I do, I still take heed, I still listen. I still paint that perfect picture. I still shine bright like a prism. My words still skipping through air. I know you can't, don't, won't get it. You chose to ride that ship, salt with it. I'm still afloat. I ain't the captain of the yacht, but I'm on the boat. I ain't acting what I'm not, knowing that I don't. You acting like you will, but I know you won't. You won't. I read between the lines of the eyes of your brows. Your handshake ain't matching your smile. You fine. Staring ahead, ready to go bananas. Two f's on me, two extra f's on me. I know my mind ain't playing tricks on me. I ain't skits, homie. Ain't nobody drop a mic on me. It's like they try and plot a sit on me. I hear this voice in the back of my mind like Matt, tighten up your circle before they hurt you. Read they body language. 85% communication, nonverbal. 85% swear they know you. 10% you know they story. Man, the other 5 times I'll show you, just know you. The pulley strings, you the puppet master. Some other bastards. Man, watch you, you puffin' after. Play your cards, go against all odds. Shoot for the moon, if you miss, still amongst those stars. You
filler, can you reap a floating? Foul preacher quoting scriptures for revelation. It's talking, got the devil waiting. Body getting stiff, soul levitating. Why do I speak blasphemy? Knowing one day that will ask for me. Ask for my sins. No one to feel his wrath for me. I go through it so you wouldn't do it after me. Ask for me. I'm still circling the block before I'm parking. Not bitching, I'm just still cautious. Same black Parker, same extra still, but with that same Larkin. Damn, I feel it in the air, you not sincere. It ain't a us or we or I'm a thing. It's a good, bad karma thing. It's a psalm and an honest thing. I swear I feel.
Yo, yo, yo. Yo. You know? You know, you know, you know. All right, we are on Racketeering Act 8B, Coercion or Enticement. And, whew, let's get into it. Racketeering B8, Coercion or Enticement. The government alternately argues that the defendant is guilty of Mann Act stemming from his April trip to California because the defendant knowingly persuaded, induced, enticed, coerced Jane to travel to California. Insufficient evidence exists to prove that the defendant took any action to induce, persuade, entice, or coerce Jane into traveling to California to April to May 2015. I have to agree with that. Whose idea was it to come on a trip? I'm certain that it wasn't a 17-year-old never been to California before. She didn't pay for it, and he had done this many times before, as they proved, because it was other victims before her. Quite the opposite. The record shows that Jane's mother purposely and strategically enticed defendant with her 17-year-old daughter. Ugh. Comparing her to Aaliyah at various points. And she cites exhibits. The government takes great umbrage to this characterization, but the record speaks for itself. Although defense counsel did not make much use out of it. Hold on. Read that again. Although defense counsel did not make much use of it, government exhibits 233 offers powerful evidence showing that the defendant had no reason to induce, persuade, entice, or coerce Jane into going to California with him. Text messages introduced by the government with Jane, with the guidance of her mother, enticed defendant who reasonably believed Jane was 18 years old to bring her to California. In short, when Jane traveled to meet the defendant in California, April May, she required no enticement, persuasion, or encouragement of any kind. His assistant booked the ticket. She had to give him her date of birth. She was not 18 years old. That is on him. It's not on her. Doesn't matter what she did. It's his responsibility to verify who he's finna be in. You gotta understand, when you're asking someone to come out of town, that means you're gonna pay for everything. That means you're gonna pay for their flight. It means you're going to pay for their room. It means you're going to book everything, right? So when Cheryl Mack booked that ticket and put her date of birth in there, I'm pretty sure that website kicked back that, hey, this person is not 18, right? Okay. On April 11, 2015, Jane attended one of the defendant's concerts in Orlando, Florida. After the show, someone provided Jane with the defendant's telephone number. Jane attempted to text the number on the phone and gave the paper to her mother. Although Jane did not reach the defendant, Jane's mother began texting the defendant, posing as her 17-year-old daughter. And they cite the pages in the exhibits of the text messages of the paperwork. Jane eventually communicated directly with the defendant via FaceTime and told the defendant she was 18 years old. Hold on. I want to read that again. So her mother began texting the defendant, posing as her 17-year-old daughter. Jane eventually communicated directly with the defendant via FaceTime and told the defendant she was 18 years old. On April 20th, 2015, Jane's mother, still posing as Jane, initiated text message with the defendant and arranged for Jane to meet the defendant in a hotel in Orlando. So the concert, and that's why I wanted to read this, the concert is Saturday, which is April 18th. April 20th, Jane's mother, still posing as Jane, initiated text messages with the defendant and arranged for Jane to meet the defendant at a hotel in Orlando. Government Exhibit 233 shows that Jane and her mother knew from the start that the defendant was interested in Jane sexually, believing that she was of legal consenting age. Before Jane's first meeting with the defendant, Jane's mother texts Jane stating, "This man's trying to screw, but I'm trying to make it business. He knows you're a singer, but he ain't playing. He want to fuck tonight." Wow. Despite that, Jane and her mother were on notice that defendant was interested in Jane sexually. I'm going to read that again. Despite that, Jane and her mother were on notice that defendant was interested in Jane sexually. Jane's mother encouraged Jane to meet the defendant. She told Jane to keep defendant's curiosity piqued and advised her about what she should wear to effectively entice him. During her in-court testimony, Jane testified that she went to meet the defendant solely to audition for him. But her contemptuous text message revealed that Jane was more interested in the defendant for personal and romantic reasons. Jane texted her mother, "Oh, he is so fine." When Jane's mother told her to be ready to sing something, Jane said, "Ugh," suggesting that she did not actually want to audition for the defendant. Jane's mother encouraged Jane to tease the defendant but not do anything sexually with him, then he would lose interest in her. Believing that he was speaking to an 18-year-old Jane, defendant texted Jane's mother that he was staying on the tour bus but was going to get a room for their privacy. Jane's mother then shared the message with Jane, texting, "Yep, he said he's staying on the tour bus, but he wants to get a hotel room for just y'all so y'all can get away from security and managers." Jane's mother gave Jane some final advice before she sent her daughter to meet the defendant, who believed Jane to be 18 years old. And I have to say that is fucked up. If this is true, then that is fucked up. And it is in court documents, and it is in exhibits, and it is exculpatory and Brady evidence. "Be prepared to sing three songs," he said. "He will meet you and listen to your song. Please have your glasses off, hair to the side. Mama knows best, pretty hurts, and your third choice, don't yell, put on a show. Dance, grab his hand, shimmy, wiggle, sit on his lap, entice him while singing. It's all about performance. This your chance and opportunity, don't blow it." Jane's mother even told Jane not to look grown. "Take off that ugly ass lipstick. I told you he don't want you to be grown." Wow. "Take off that ugly ass lipstick. I told you he don't want you to be grown. I told you to keep hair curly. That shit look a mess. You need some jeans or shorts. You trying to look grown. He wanted you because you look young and innocent. That's what he want. Not a little girl trying to be grown. You're a damn fool." Defying her mother's advice to merely tease the defendant, Jane engaged in sexual conduct with the defendant in the hotel room. Jane stripped down to her undergarments and walked back and forth with the defendant. She later acquiesced to removing her clothes, testifying that she got on top of him backwards and he did lick my butt. After the sexual encounter, officers arrived at the hotel room and knocked on the door. After arriving for Jane to meet the defendant in the hotel, Jane's parents apparently called the police. Jane described the defendant as nervous and anxious, asking her to confirm that she was 18 years old, as she has represented. Jane testified at trial, "After the defendant looked through the peephole, he made me go into the restroom immediately and told me to get dressed. And he said, 'Are you 18? And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Don't lie to me." And I said, "Yes." Defendant opened the door and the police checked Jane's identification to confirm her age before leaving. Defendant was present when police officers checked out Jane's identification. Rather than calling it a night, Jane again removed her clothes and got on the top of the defendant to continue sexual activities. After her first encounter with the defendant, Jane told her mother that defendant had asked whether he could fly her to meet him. Jane told her mother, "I said, duh." Jane continued to communicate with the defendant via text message and by phone and continued to spend time with the defendant in Orlando during normal dating activities such as seeing movies and eating out. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. On that note, I'm disgusted. This is my first time reading this. Someone tried to send it to me. It came choppy and I had to pay for it. I'm extremely frustrated and I'm going to end this podcast. We are going to start out, pick up right here on the next one. I'm really irritated. You know? Really irritated. That's irritated. And I did, we're going to go back over the interviews because, you know, we're going to have to. You know, we're going to have to. We're just going to have to. You know? But until next time. On the Grown Little Boy Podcast.
Hello, baby.
You will be listening to me humiliated, stressed out, fucked over, bamboozled, tricked, led astray,
and then you're gone.
And some more shit. What the fuck? I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot.
Mama put me out at only 14, so I start selling crack cocaine and codeine. Time to stack some paper, I gotta do it quick. Thinking I'm a juvenile, but they don't know
who they fucking with. Yeah,
my mama's only son, but I live every day like it's my motherfucking last one. Every nigga in they mama asking why,
but I'm in the game, live by the game, and in the game I'ma die.
And if I die, or should I say,
should I go?
Bury me in horn clock next to the come and go. Cause tomorrow ain't promised to me. The only thing promised to a player is the penitentiary. So I'ma take care of my business on the smooth tip. Watch my back selling crack and pack
tulips.
And when you think about that, you say it'll be on a trip you're here today. But
and
the next day you're gone.
One day you're here. God damn. Alright, y'all.